The content of this podcast should not be considered financial or investment advice. All interviews and discussions are opinions only, and the podcast has been created without taking into consideration the listener's financial objectives, financial situation, or needs. Listeners should obtain independent advice before making any financial decisions. G'day, this is Barry Fitzgerald, Garen Perro columnist for StockEd. Welcome to another edition of the Explorers podcast. We're off to Namibia today with Elevate Uranium. Trades under the code EL8, last quoted at 54 cents for a market cap of around $165 million, which is up very nicely since July last year, which is in keeping with that run we've had in uranium. More than doubling last year, got over $100, back around $92 a pound US at the moment, which is a price that has obviously switched on investor interest to the uranium space. Now, to bring us up to speed on what Elevate's been up to, we have the Managing Director, Murray Hill, with us today. G'day, Murray. Welcome to the podcast.
G'day, Barry. Thanks for having me.
Good. Murray, bit of news out in the last recent weeks, essentially your flagship project, Copies Project there in Namibia, a resource upgrade. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, I think last time we spoke, we were sitting at 20 million pound. November last year, we jumped that to 48 million pound. And then the rigs were working through to finish off the sort of current phase of inferred drilling. And now we're sitting at sort of basically 58 million pounds. So it's a pretty big increase over the last sort of, you know, 5 months from 20 million to 58 million. So the mineralization spread over 20 kilometers. And one of the things I love about it is, you know, 50% of the ore sits within about 7 meters of surface. So it's a really, really shallow deposit, very low strip ratios and, you know, expected low mining costs.
And the grade is 195 parts per million, which in that part of the world is okay. And you also have this beneficiation proprietary technology. Tell us a bit about that and how it might be applicable to copies in the long run.
Yeah, so upgrade we developed on the Maranika project, which was about half the grade of copies, and that demonstrated that we could reduce the cost base by about 50% for CapEx and OpEx, and we produce a very low mass concentrate, less than 5% of the weight. So what it means is, or what it is we use commonly used unit operations you find a gold-based metal mineral sands plant, and we configure them unconventionally. And what we did was we looked at the minerals present, and we determined the best approach was to concentrate the gangue mineral and then throw it away. So that's counterintuitive and innovative and hence patentable. So we've got 3 patents on this process around the world. We produce less than 5% of the mass into a concentrate. So what that means is that, you know, you've got, I mentioned before, low strip ratio, low near surface, low mining cost, couple that with a process that lowers the cost base. And then you've got the optionality of, you've got less than 5% of the mass. Do you transport it off-site to a third party for leaching and refining, or do you leach and refine it yourself? So we've got optionality about how we develop the Copies project, but also projects around Copies within tracking distance. You know, what you could do is, you know, maybe produce a concentrate from those and bring those into a center of gravity operation sitting at Copies, for instance, where you've got a leach refinery. So it gives us enormous optionality around what we do with our projects in Namibia.
Now, tell us a bit about the style of the deposit, because obviously there's something about it that has allowed you to, once you start drilling, to grow this resource quite dramatically in recent times. So tell us a bit about the style of it.
Yeah, look, the style we were looking for was paleo channels, and there are a lot of paleo channels in Namibia that carry uranium. You know, we've got our neighbours of Langer Heinrich with Paladin's ownership on that, Tumas for Deep Yellow, Osinana's a bit further south of us, and then Trikopi up near our Maranika project. So a lot of paleo channels in Namibia. Initially look for those, and we use EM, both airborne and ground-based EM, to find them. But when we were drilling, we noted that there was mineralization in the weathered basement, both underneath the paleo channel and alongside the paleo channel. And then we started to sort of progress into the unknown, as our geology manager says. So from the known to the unknown, and we stepped out, we followed some radiometric signals, and we've now got 60 plus percent of our deposit in this weathered basement. I was across there 2 weeks ago, digging some test pits, collecting samples for bulk metallurgical test work on our process. And the pit we dug in, where the basement was just, it was just yellow everywhere. There's the carnotite mineral is a beautiful yellow color, and it was sitting on the surface of the schist. So it's not inside the schist, it's on the surface. So that means that our beneficiation process is going to recover that uranium very easily. So it was quite exciting. I mean, when you're looking at a pit and all you see is yellow, it's such a beautiful color. So it is a different style of mineralization. It's different to what we were initially looking for. But what it's meant that is that, you know, we now have this sort of weathered basement outside of our paleo channels, and that's opened up exploration in all of other tenements, you know, where we're only looking at paleo channels previously. So we've got three drill rigs working on resource confidence increase at Coppies. We got a drill rig working at Hirabeb on a maiden resource. We've got a drill rig working at Capri on a maiden resource, and some exploration around those based on this just sort of new thought process around mineralization. And then, you know, we'll have one of the rigs coming off Coppies moving on to Greensfields exploration shortly. So last time I spoke with you, I think we had three rigs. We've gone to five rigs now, and drilling 125 holes a week minimum. Last week we drilled a lot more than that. They had a pretty good week, but
it helps when they're nice and shallow holes, I guess.
Absolutely, mate. When you're going down 28 metres, it's not a deep hole and it's vertical, it's RC, it's pretty simple drilling. And if you've seen the desert out in Namibia, there's no trees. This is pretty flat terrain, so you can pretty much drill where you want to drill. You don't have to clear anything. It's good for us.
So now you're at Coppies, you're in that drilling to upgrade confidence from inferred to indicated resource?
Yes, yeah. We're looking at, we've progressively worked through Coppies 1, Coppies 2, Coppies 3, and then Coppies 4. So we're working on that now, three drill rigs working. So, and what it might do is it might also find a little bit of uranium around the edges. You know, if there's some that we'd think that it's worth following up, we may well do so. But, you know, the primary focus is on increasing that confidence level. It's important for us to move from inferred to indicated. Investors want to see a higher confidence level in that resource.
And then you roll it into scoping feasibility studies, I guess.
Well, what we'll do is we're running a parallel metallurgical test work program with the indicated drilling. So those samples being collected now, and then we'll bring them across to Perth. We'll do the metallurgical test work program. And the next, once we finish our indicated drilling, which will happen next year, because there's a lot of drilling to do, even though we're drilling a lot of holes a week, we'll hopefully run a pilot plant next year to prove our upgrade process before we go down, you know, any study path. I think the best thing we can do is prove that upgrade. Investors have said to us for a long time, we love the idea of upgrade. It sounds like a fantastic story, but let's have some proof. So that's what we want to do. We want to run a pilot plant, and then we'll sort of run a study off the back of that potentially.
Right, okay. Now, you're in an interesting part of the world there in Namibia, and you mentioned Langer Heinrich, owned by Palliser, now a $4.5 billion company, would you believe? Deep Yellow, it's got its Tumas deposit, and they're at $1.5 billion. And another ASX company over there, Bannerman, it's got its Tango project, $700 million. Now, I mentioned you guys have come up nicely since July last year, now at around $166 million. Well, I'm just wondering what you see as needs to be done to get a re-rating to capture some of that big-time market cap that those others have.
Yeah, it's a good question, isn't it? What ticks it for investors? Obviously, we're on the low end, and what it means is we've got enormous growth potential in that when you consider the market caps of those companies. I think it's a bit of marketing that we're working on now, and also increasing investors' confidence level in what we're doing. I mean, we've made four discoveries in 4 years in Namibia. All of our peers that you just mentioned bought their deposits. They haven't discovered them, they bought them. You know, in the same area we're working, Namibia, we discovered ours. So we're a step behind them on that basis. You know, we've done the hard work to discover. So we're expecting that as we increase the confidence level of the Coppies resource to indicate it, we prove our upgrade process adds significant value to the projects, both Coppies and other projects, then I think we'll get a re-rating. But also, you know, the valuation of exploration companies is pounds in the ground and confidence in the pounds. So we were trying to add to those pounds in the ground with our maiden sort of resources at other projects outside of Coppies. So, you know, we're expecting that both increasing our resource base, increasing the confidence level, and then taking upgrade through the capital, pilot plant stage is going to have a big impact on our re-rating.
Right. Now, the company's obviously Perth-based, but I'm just wondering from an operational exploration point of view, how do you manage that over in Namibia there?
We have a great general manager in Namibia and a very good team. We've gone from one geo 18 months ago to now having six and about to employ another four. A couple of years ago, we had one rig working. Now we've got five rigs working. So it is growth, but we get across there two or three times a year. But our general manager does a fantastic job. The communication with Namibia is good. It's only a six-hour time difference. So it works very well for us. They're good people. They understand what they're doing. And, you know, it's simple process for us, really, just the communication side of it. But we also get assets in Australia. So we're based here because it's a logical place to be based around where you can raise capital and also around near our Australian project. So it works for us and it works well for us.
Yeah, it's interesting too. Sometimes companies, be they Canadian, Australian, British, American, they look around for where the best market is to give them deep value. And it's interesting that you've got all these ASX companies operating in Namibia and they do get deep value in this market. So the Australian market understands the scene over there.
Yeah, and look, Namibia is a fantastic country. If you haven't been there and you're looking for a holiday in Africa, go to Namibia. I took my kids and family there, and you know, back in 2011, self-drive tour. It's fantastic. It's the only country in the world that dedicated uranium association. So they're a conduit between us and you know, general public and government. But also, there's 48 years of continuous operating at the Rössing uranium mine. So there's two generations plus of Namibians are familiar with uranium, right? They're not scared of it like the Western world, and we are here. And, you know, there's been, three uranium mines developed in Namibia in the last 16 years, Trikopi, Langer Heinrich, and Husab. And then the two peers you just mentioned, Bannerman and Deep Yellow, just had licenses granted, mining licenses granted in December last year. So there's a strong history of mining and there's a strong support for uranium mining in the country. So that's also, you know, means it's a great jurisdiction for us to be in. It's the obvious place to be.
Nice way to segue into something that caught my eye the other day. I saw you on stage berating the WA political scene for not being supportive of uranium mining, which made me chuckle a bit, given that, around 2030, or after 2030, out at HMAS Stirling, all those West Australians will be waving goodbye to nuclear subs as they take off up the West Australian coast, sailing past some of the world's biggest uranium deposits, undeveloped. I'm thinking Kintyre and, what was that other one?
Yeelirrie.
Yeah, Yeelirrie, the old WMC one. And you guys, of course, have some interest in WA. Your main Australian interest, of course, up in the NT. But what do you make of that? Do you think WA will switch at some time, get supportive?
Yeah, look, I got a few comments after that. night, and I do suffer from a disease called honesty, Barry, and that gets me into trouble sometimes. But, you know, when you consider that West Australia is a powerhouse mining state and we're completely ignoring uranium, and you look at the AI, the huge consumption of energy that's going to take up over the next, you know, so many years, and the energy we need, we want to go carbon-free, we want baseload energy, and our West Australian government is saying, no, you can't mine uranium. The rest of the world are pushing down the path of nuclear. And we've got a ban on it here. We've got a ban on nuclear energy production here. I mean, it's like we've taken a step backwards. We're going to go from a powerhouse to we're going to be laughable. You know, people looking at us going, you've got to be, you like serious about the future or aren't you? So you'd have to think that the Labor government would begin to change their mind, but you know what governments are like. They're very, very hard to argue with. And someone said to me the other night, well, you know, we should be pushing the government. Well, it's not up to individual companies. It's up to the, you know, the bodies that support the industry to be pushing. But how do you argue with someone when you can't deal with facts? They just deal with, you know, emotion, what they should be doing. So it is, I can see that it may change, but gee, it's a long road because you've got these inner beliefs that uranium is dangerous and nuclear is dangerous, and yet, you know, the rest of the world are embracing it.
And you've got the neighbouring state, South Australia. It's got the world's biggest single uranium deposit there at Olympic Dam, happily producing away. And Honeymoon Mine just started up again, and Heathgate's operation is buzzing along. So, yeah, it's curious. So how do you sum up your, obviously, Namibia is the flagship for the company, but is there much work going on at your Australian uranium interests at the moment?
Yeah, look, I suppose when you go back over time, we closed the transaction on the Australian assets in December 2019. As you remember, the world went shit about, what, March 2020? And McGowan shut us down for 3 years, essentially. So we couldn't even go out to any of our projects we just bought. So it's taken us a while to get on the ground and get some momentum. But, you know, we made four discoveries in Namibia in 4 years. So, and copies went to 58 million pounds. So it's pretty hard to sort of go away from $1,000 a hole exploration in Namibia to significantly more in Australia. So if we weren't getting the success over Namibia, we would have been pushing Australia harder, but we're getting great success over there. But the time's come. Uranium prices moved, as you said before. And, you know, we feel we need to do something in the Australian assets. So we're planning drill programs on Minerva and Angela later this year. We're just going through the process. I mean, it's a different process in Australia versus Namibia. In Namibia, you get a license granted, provisional grant, and then you've got 12 months to get environmental clearance. Once you get your environmental clearance, you then get your full license. Once you get your full license, you just write a letter to the ministry to say, we're going to drill these holes. Don't need a response. In Australia, you've got your environmental clearance, you got your bloody license, and now you've got to write a radiation management plan. You've got to have a, you know, mine management plan. And it takes, all these have got to be approved before you can drill a hole. So the process is quite lengthy here and arduous, whereas in Namibia, it's a very simple process that works very effectively. So it takes us time to, you know, we plan the holes and then we've got to go through this additional planning stage of putting everything on paper and getting approval from the appropriate authorities before we can drill anything. But we are planning to drill. Our joint venture partner, Energy Metals, is drilling for the first time in about 10 or 12 years in a few months' time. So we'll probably piggyback an exploration program at the back of them.
And just so investors know, Angela and Minerva are in the Northern Territory, not the closed to uranium mining WA. All right. Now, interestingly, one of the big issues for uranium investors in ASX stocks, that is we've had this uranium run. Is it going to peter out, or are we at the start of something special?
Yeah, interesting choice of word. We've had this uranium run. We are in the middle of a uranium run and at the early stages. I think we're probably of a five-course meal. We've probably just finished our starters. You know, we've still got four courses to go. When you consider the enormous, like, so when you go back to 2007, Barry, with the last uranium run, you know, what was it driven by? It was driven by Cigar Lake flooded, the biggest uranium mine in the world at the time. So production was reduced from there. But we then were still producing from other mines. We were producing too much for a while, uranium. This time we've got a global push for climate change, right, where you want net zero, right? You want low carbon emissions. So, and we've also got this enormous demand for energy coming from this AI, cryptocurrencies and the likes that nobody's ever experienced before, and the growth that they're predicting is ridiculous growth in terms of demand for energy. And then you bring in EVs and batteries. Now, EVs sound great if you don't open your eyes to the rest of the world, but a battery stores energy. A battery discharges energy. I'll let you know a secret. Batteries don't generate energy. So the more batteries we've got, the more energy we need. So, you know, they all couple together to mean that we're going to need an enormous amount of energy, and it has to be reliable baseload energy. We're finding out the renewables. I mean, when I was driving home the other night, I went out for dinner, I was driving home, the sun wasn't shining. And I don't know where it is where you are. The sun doesn't shine at night. So, you know, you're not getting solar energy. The wind wasn't blowing when I ride my bike into work this morning. So there's no wind energy. So, you know, renewables just don't provide baseload energy, and you want baseload energy. So, and that's where nuclear comes into it. So the current demand for nuclear is built on current demand for nuclear, right? But it's also future demand, enormous demand. So we can't meet, the supply can't meet current requirements, right? Current demand. So we need to increase our uranium production, and how do you incentivize uranium production increase? The underlying commodity price has to move north. Now, there's a few players started to move at these prices. I mean, there's care and maintenance come back on stream, as you know, Boss and Pellet and Langer Heinrich and Cameco coming back on stream. The Kazakh Shibuset saying they can produce more uranium, but they don't have enough acid. They're depleting their reserves. They've produced a lot of uranium over the last sort of 15 years. So we need to incentivize production, and that's where it's going to come from. It's going to come from increasing uranium price. So I don't see, I had an interview in December last year and said the uranium price would go to 100. Fortunately, I was right. I can see it going to 200 comfortably, and I said that in an interview just recently, but I don't know when it's going to be. Because the markets are very difficult to predict at the moment. You know, there's not a lot of logic in some of it. You know, our market cap went up to 200 million when the uranium price went to $64 a pound 3 years ago. We didn't have copies at 20 million pound then. We've now got copies at 58 million pound. We've got 152 million pound of global resources. So, you know, our market cap, as you said, relative to the others, we've got enormous growth. So once people catch on to the Elevate story, we continue to kick goals like we are, you know. Why can't we be a $1 billion market cap?
Well, I think 200 US uranium would get you there in a hurry. All righty. Let's wrap it up and give investors a feel before we finish up about what milestones might be ahead of the company in the next 12 months or so.
Okay. So five drill rigs working in Namibia, drilling 125 holes a week between them. Two to three of those rigs are going to be sitting on the copies inferred to indicated, increasing the confidence of the resource. One rig will be pulled out to go exploring and finding more discoveries we can to increase from four discoveries in 4 years to maybe a few more than that. We've got a rig sitting on Capri doing some exploration and then moving into resource drilling. We've got a rig sitting on and Maiden Resource. A rig sitting on Hirabet doing some exploration and then Maiden Resource. So we're expecting news flow out of both or three of those projects and potential news flow out of the fifth rig going around doing further exploration work. And then we're doing metallurgical test work on the Copies project. The test pits are being excavated now, as I mentioned before. We expect that, you know, the test work program will run for most of this year in Perth, and then we'll move in towards a pilot plant. The location of that pilot plant will be determined. But that will prove the upgrade process on the copies on the ore and whether or not we run it in other ores as time goes by. So a lot of things happening in Namibia, right? And then in Australia, the Angela project, it's a 31 million pound resource at 1300 ppm. So great asset. It's open at depth. It dips at 9 degrees. We've done some seismic work that identified the mineralized lens. We've also identified a lens beneath the mineralized lens. Is it mineralized? Well, if you don't drill it, you don't find out. So we won't drill that. So that could add to that resource. And then the Minerva, it was discovered in 1978, hasn't been drilled since 1978. 10 of the holes hit mineralization greater than 10,000 ppm uranium. That's enormous grades for Australia. So we need to drill some holes in it because they were vertical holes back then in 1978. You know, no one really understands the structure. We've got to drill some diamond holes in it, understand the structure, work out how to explore it better. So that's what we're planning in Australia over this year as well. So both Namibia and Australia are going to give some news flow and our upgrade process is going to give some news flow.
Excellent. Great stuff, Murray. Thanks again for your time. Lots to look out for there in the next 12 months or so. In a rising market for uranium, and let's bring on that US$200 a pound as soon as possible. So thanks for your time today. Good luck with it all. We'll be watching with interest. Cheers.
Thanks, Murray.